Welcome back.
Just a little housekeeping. 2 weeks from today is Thanksgiving, and 4 weeks from today I'm going to be in the West Coast. So we won't meet again until December 20th. It's on your list, just so you are aware of that. Actually, I might be in town that Thursday in 4 weeks, but I can't do three workshops in a row. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, plus travel across the country. So I decided to give myself a break. And we'll meet, I think it's like 6 weeks from today. And then we take...
Oh, so we're not meeting on the 20th?
We are meeting on the 20th.
We are meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we were... Yeah, that will be our last meeting for this year, December 20th. And then I'll get you the schedule for next year.
So we're not meeting the 6th?
We're not meeting the 6th, correct.
And that's going to be our party date.
The 20th.
The 20th, okay.
I mean... I'm asking.
Sure, absolutely.
See how hard we resisted?
We're so easy.
Yeah.
We gave you $10 for coffee. I have a little notation here.
Well, last year, we did it at the end of the year? I don't know.
Last year, you did it at the
end of the year. How much can coffee be? Do you think we should do it at the end of the... the year and then at the end of May? What do you think?
Do they charge you for that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. That's why you felt like the union is
pretty in.
Yeah, it's probably a little more than the cost of them, but, you know, they get a lot of fooling around, and why not?
Should we give them some money, maybe? So bring $10 for coffee the last class. And then we'll just pass it on to them.
Sure.
Probably do good to keep in their good graces. I said, well, Karin wasn't feeling well today. I don't know if they're going to catch on or not, if they care.
How is she?
I don't think very well. And she, you know more about her.
she just, mornings are, first of all, not her best time. Never have been, but now with disability. She had some of the surgeries.
She had
that
redone 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
By the way, Patty's gotten
one.
Really?
Yeah. You know, she's always subject to that because of
this
type of lung disease.
Well, and plus, don't they ever immunosuppressed? No.
Well, she gets those infusions. She'll probably have to have another round of infusions.
Of antibiotic.
Yeah. And she can't gain weight. She's thin, so. Mm-hmm. She just found out. I guess she's probably going to just keep on.
And she doesn't even go anywhere, does she? I mean, she just it must be dormant and then come back.
Yeah. With that particular, I was predicting about it.
She's got bronchiectasis. Is that what it's called? Where the cilia, the bronchi have pulled away so the cilia can't do their job of moving things out of her lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't appreciate health until it starts going.
Mm-hmm. I just finished this out of circumstance. I found this book on how this was right at the island off of Honolulu. Anyway, that's where they used to put the lepers. So as soon as they found out that you had leprosy, you know, you got shipped off to this island and you segregated from everybody else. Little babies, when they were born, they had to be taken right away, you know, away from their parents.
Have you ever seen leprosy?
It's hard to look at.
Isn't that in Korea, they would just be on the streets. Just picking their skin off like this. I mean, I've been grossed out twice in my life. That was one of the times.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's controlled now.
Yeah.
This is like... late Yeah, late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
They still have, I mean, in fact, today I guess there's 30 some individuals who are still there.
On that island. Okay, quick review. I believe we're seeing synthesis. Remember, we had all that imagery, young woman, old man. Elijah Solomon, which I talked about as the union of, or the polarities of spirit and matter, desire and meaning. And why was it so important to him? Well, because he was facing a personal situation where that was active. And it's relevant to our time as well, because our theology is spirit-based, and it completely ignores matter and passion. Now, we ended with his dialogue, confrontation, discussion with the snake. And he says, as we ended, on 3:18, was my soul the serpent? That's the that's the middle paragraph in the page. Why did I behave as if that serpent were my soul? Now, is it or isn't it? Well, yes. The issue I think he's beginning to realize is the soul first manifests as a serpent. That means the serpent as desire, as the most primal part of ourselves, and the serpent as the serpentine way of life, which is what we come to when we try to live our desire seriously. There's no straight lines. It's a bunch of detours. Now, that isn't the soul, but it is the soul in as much as that's where the soul starts. And if we can accept that condition and work with the imagery that we experience while dealing with that condition, the soul manifests. So you could say it's the beginning of the soul, but in and of itself, it's not the soul. I mean, think of hedonists. They have no soul. Think of prudes. They too have no soul. The art of living is accepting that instinct, living it, and then seeing what it communicates. That's the birth of the soul. So where before he had two different images, now he's got one image that transforms. And we'll see how that then transforms. So I think, in a way, we've reached a personification of all he's been working for. It's still problematic, and it is always problematic. But it's a single image, where before it was two. That's how I understand it.
Didn't he say, too, I mean,
you don't really solve the problems, you just outgrow them. So as, yeah. As, I mean,
problematic, but I mean, you outgrow eventually the problem.
And I think the outgrowing would be when you can deal with those opposites and transcend them. But you can't transcend them until you deal with them. And what spirituality, quote unquote, does, it just tries to transcend them and then represses everything that is upsetting.
So the two images of the soul before were the, represented the opposites.
Right.
Like Elijah and Solomon.
Yeah.
And the snake is the synthesis of spirit and matter?
Well, the snake is now seen that, this is how I would put it, that the synthesis of spirit and matter is a process.
And that's the beginning of it.
Yeah, and the snake is the beginning of that process. And in a way, the end of the process, if you think of the snake as wisdom. But you don't get to wisdom until you've been through the serpentine path. Okay, so we'll pick up, why did I behave? See where I am? Why did I behave as if that serpent were my soul? Only, it seems, because my soul was a serpent. So I understand that to mean that his soul was being presented to him first in its serpentine form. This knowledge gave my soul a new face. So he didn't realize before the connection between instinct and soul. And I decided henceforth to enchant her myself and subject her to my power. Now that's a loaded statement. Mm-hmm. How do you reconcile that with the fact that the soul is our guide?
Well, I guess we need consciousness in the process.
Yeah. If the first stage of this process is getting strong enough that this thing doesn't destroy your life, that you can say, yes, I will go with it, or no, I won't go with it. That it's a choice. If you're simply swept along, nothing's going to happen. That's how I understand. But it's a dangerous statement. Because really the soul guides us. But at the beginning, we have to... It's like training a dog. I mean, it's maybe a bad analogy, but you give the dog a lot of freedom, the dog's got to know who's the boss. Otherwise, it'll just run all over you. I think the same with the soul. We are ultimately aiming at establishing a relationship with it, but we have to be strong.
I think, actually, before you started, I wanted to go to that sentence right before, why did I behave?
Mm-hmm.
He said, he who is becoming belongs in the desert or in a prison, for he is beyond the human. If men want to become, they behave like animals.
That's beautiful, yeah.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what you were talking about.
Yeah. Speaking of animals, I just discovered this morning, I guess, you know that nature series on PBS?
Yeah.
Have you seen the most recent? I think it's the most recent. Odd Friends?
Yeah.
Sometimes I think animals are better than people. Much better than people. See, Jung is trying to recover that instinctual side. And yet not be a victim of it, yet allow it to enhance his life on another dimension. But you can't have that happen unless you go through and meet consciously assent to its demands. And also put your limits. It's a balancing act. And that's a lot of what we do in our work, is try to navigate those two poles. Where before he was taking them as two poles, now he's just seeing them as two sides of a continuum. So this is really laying the groundwork for his psychology. I think that little simple bit here.
Which is completely different than dealing with an all good spiritual entity that you just obey.
Yeah. Absolutely.
where are we exactly? They call it two still?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. Say, I started with why did I behave? See where I am at the middle. And Sandy just took us a few lines above.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to continue on after subject heard of my power. See where we are? Serpents are a why. So that's the serpent as the end point. And I wanted my serpent soul to communicate her wisdom to me. Never before had life been so doubtful, a night of aimless tension. Being one in being directed against one another. So I think that's all saying what I just said. And then we come to that. Extremely important. I'm almost tempted to say one of the two most important of this whole series. Now his footnote for aging eyes is unreadable. So I photocopied and enlarged it for myself. Again, why I feel this is such a crucial point in this story, and it's not announced as, woohoo, this is a big deal, but the fact that these pictures are so important to me confirms that what we've just seen is a culmination of what he's been working with. So I'll read you just part of what he has, what the footnote says to this picture. January 9th, 1927. So see, this has been painted, 14 years later. And I guess that he must have incorporated this into the book when he recalligraphied the book. That's how I understand it. My friend Herman Sink died at age 52. Now, I think before I go on, I'm going to read you the dream in memories that he's referring to. Some of you may have heard this. Bear with me. I think knowing the dream will help us make sense of this picture and the next picture. I think it's some of the most beautiful paragraphs in memories. This is page 197, if you want to check back on it. It'll be about two pages, so bear with me, but I think you'll find it done. In 1927, I confirmed confirmation of my ideas about the center and the self by way of a dream. We'll hear that dream in a minute. Now, the self and the center, you see, I think it's implied in what we just said, that the snake is the foundation of the soul. Saying the same thing in two different ways. I represented its essence in a mandala, which I called Window on Eternity. That's that picture. A year later, I painted a second picture. That's the next picture we'll be looking at. Maybe I'll just give you a quick peek at it. These are the two that he's talking about. And both of these come out of one dream. Let's just stay with this for a minute. Sit for the moment. A year later, I painted a second picture, likewise a mandala, with a golden castle in the center. When it was finished, I asked myself, why is this so Chinese? We'll jump back and forth here. I was immediately impressed by the form and choice of colors, which seemed to me Chinese, although there was nothing outwardly Chinese about it. Yet that was how it affected me. Now this is the blockbuster sentence, I think. It was a strange coincidence that shortly afterward I received a letter from Richard Wilhelm enclosing the manuscript of a Taoist alchemical treatise entitled The Secret of the Golden Flower, with a request that I write a commentary on it. I devoured the manuscript at once, but the text gave me undreamed-of confirmation of my ideas about the mandala and the circumambulation of the center. That was the event which broke through my isolation. I became aware of an affinity. I could establish ties with something and someone. So this is an enormously important part of the process. In remembrance of this coincidence, this synchronicity, I wrote underneath the picture, so that's what he's describing now, the text underneath the picture, which had made so Chinese an impression upon me. In 1928, when I was painting this picture, showing the golden, well-fortified castle, Richard Wilhelm in Frankfurt sent me the 1,000-year-old Chinese text on the yellow castle, the germ of the immortal body. With me so far.
How much time was there between the window on eternity and the and this one?
I think months.
Okay, they were right together.
They're right
much.
Together. Yeah.
Okay.
That was the 1928.
Yeah, the first one was 1927, I think. So yeah, within the year. So it's coming at, see, this is coming at the end of the period of disorientation. And it's the fruit of, I believe, what we're seeing expressed here, I believe, for the first time, clearly. And I find this dream just astounding. This is the dream I mentioned earlier. So this dream was in 1927. But I think would represent the culmination of what we've been seeing here. I found myself in a dirty, sooty city. It was night and winter and dark and raining. I was in Liverpool with a number of Swiss, say half a dozen. I walked through the dark streets. Now Liverpool would be like Hammond, Indiana, or Newark, New Jersey. It's where the Beatles performed, but it's just a shithole of a city. I had the feeling that we were coming up from the harbor and that the real city was actually up above on the cliffs. We climbed up there. It reminded me of Basel, where the market is down below and then you go up through the Alley of the Dead, the name of the street, in German it's Totengäste, Alley of the Dead, which leads to a plateau above and so to the Petersplatz and to the Peterskirche. When we reached the plateau, we found a broad square dimly illuminated by streetlights into which many streets converged. The various quarters of the city were arranged radially around the square. See, that's what he's painting here. And that's what he gives in a stylistic form here, those lines of the streets. In the center was a round pool, and in the middle of it, a small island. While everything around about was obscured by rain, fog, smoke, and dimly lit darkness, the little island blazed with sunlight. On it stood a single tree, a magnolia, in a shower of reddish blossoms. And that's what he's painted, that magnolia there in the center. It was as though the tree stood in the sunlight and were at the same time the source of the light. My companions commented on the abominable weather and obviously did not see the tree. They spoke of another Swiss who was living in Liverpool, that would be Jung, and expressed surprise that he should have settled here. I was carried away by the beauty of the flowering tree and the sunlight island and thought, I know very well why he has settled here, and I awoke. To me, what is so important there, that darkness was the depression he was going through. And then that light, which is painted here, came out of his enduring that dark night of the soul that I was 15 years. Now, do you want to talk about the picture all before we look at the text? Now, I wanted to give you the background for what it was a painting of.
I think it's a very impressive piece of painting, as far as its complexity and design goes.
I like the color choices outside, the gold and yellow made me think of snakeskin, so that's the impression I got.
Mm-hmm.
In the form of a stained glass window, mm-hmm. which he had in his study, didn't he? Have some?
Yes.
He had some stained glass windows in his study, and small clear plates, clear panels.
Mm-hmm.
So he almost wanted to have his window to look at
mm-hmm.
in his study.
If you let yourself go in there, it's almost like that room is that golden room. And then the window is magnolia in the center. And also, as I was sitting here looking at it, I don't know if it's my astigmatism or what it is, but there was such energy coming out of that flower that it was kind of radiating all around that square. That was really
mm-hmm.
You get the impression that the star-like structures surrounding it, or you're looking through some little cracks and you see way into the distance. Mm. The translucence of it is very well achieved.
Well, here, let's look at the footnote. I think it adds a little bit, some of it we've already touched on. I'll just try to pick out the main. Hopefully, hearing that dream will make these comments a little clearer. He wrote, this is a luminous flower in the center with stars rotating about. Around the flower walls, 8 gates. So that's all reference to that dream. The whole is conceived of as a transparent window. And let's just summarize. In other places, he referred to the dream, to the painting as a description of that dream. A little farther down, the dreamer went on. See where I am? I tried to paint this dream, but as so often happens, it came out rather different. The magnolia turned into a sort of rose made of ruby colored glass. It shone like a four-rayed star. The square represents the wall of the park, and at the same time, a street leading round the park in a square. And then those lines, as I mentioned, are representative of the streets in the dream. Now, something interesting, you wonder, did Jung get confused a little bit? 1932, you see where it says October 7th, 1932. Jung showed this mandala in a seminar and commented on it the next day. In this account, he states that the painting of the mandala preceded the dream. And then go down to the bottom, the last 3 lines. Now Liverpool is the center of life. Liver is the center of life, and I am not the center. I am the fool who lives in a dark place somewhere. I'm one of those little sidelights, and that way my Western prejudice that I was the center of the mandala was corrected. And everything, the whole show, became the god. So that's image 159.
Now there are a lot of times when in my journals I make note of something that I've created perhaps in a different form that I associate with a later dream. And it may not be, and then there's all, maybe there's a painting afterwards that mm-hmm. incorporates them both. I guess it's possible he's referring to an event like that.
Yeah. Either he got confused, or it could very well be that what he's doing is capturing the unconscious in a picture, and then it manifests in a dream. But I think that synchronicity of Wilhelm, you know, as he mentioned, and Wilhelm, you may not all know, was a missionary in China, German Protestant missionary. And Jung said that Wilhelm, he owed more to Wilhelm than any other man, I think, because of that. Picture, in The Secret of the Golden Flower, some of you, have you seen the pictures where it's a guy meditating and then flowers come out and they unite, and then when they unite, that's the golden flower is produced. The golden flower is produced.
Oh, produced.
Yeah.
Also in that text, don't they talk about the two aspects of the soul? Reminiscent of our text here?
They might.
Well, let's see, what is it called? The Po and the... You remember that?
No, actually, I don't remember it.
I think they do. I think they talk about two aspects.
It could very well.
Which would be another synchronicity, where he, mm-hmm. because that parallels what he's going through
yeah.
here.
Mm-hmm. So, this idea that we've got resolution appearing here is extremely important. That we have, as I said, we've reached something. Now, it's going to cause him as many problems as it solves, which we will now embark on. But I think it's a very important moment in the text. So, anything else you want to chew on before we...
Just that thing that he says at the bottom... my Western prejudice,
yeah.
I was the center of the monologue, was corrected. When he says Western prejudice, does he mean Christianity in the Western world? I wasn't clear what.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean,
maybe he means the scientific modern mind.
Certainly that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well,
because that's the one
that
thinks
sense.
That this. Thinks it's the center of
yeah.
everything.
Yeah. Because Catholicism is all about you're the sheep. There's no, you are the universe, you're the center of the universe. You're the sheep and you follow.
Right. Now, the Greeks, what do we say about them? Are they, they must have put the ego at the center, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the problem with Christianity, that's what it says, you're the sheep, but look at its role in history. It dominated everybody.
Well, to the extent that you were to imitate Christ, you become then the center, you become the God. Also, in that sense, your identification of your ego with
yeah.
God.
I'm not sure how far to take, but certainly that this idea of withers and wilders away, I think, is what he's... I decide everything. Which, at a certain point in our development, is important, but sooner or later, if you're destined for any kind of unique development, it's got to go.
That poor guy, he discovered
Copernicus? Yeah, look what they did to him.
And that was
1600s, yeah. Anything else? Now we're going to be looking at the complications that this has caused him. Plus, this image will come back in that next picture. So, How will it be now that God and the devil have become one? Why does he turn to that?
Yeah. Why?
Because his soul's the serpent?
Well, I think he's realizing that to walk this serpentine path, which is the beginning of the transformation of the snake into the soul, means you're going to have to make mistakes. You're going to have to do things which are bad, namely his affair with Tony Wolf. That it involves hurtful things, wrong things. It's maybe a little dramatized that it's evil, but certainly I think you could say hurtful.
So, say it again. It's alluding to the two aspects of the soul.
Yeah, to embark on this process means doing things that are wrong in collective judgment. Now, to us, that's probably not such an odd thought, but we got to remember this was 1914 in shortly post-Victorian Zurich. I don't know what they were like then. And now they're still incredibly rule-bound, not about sex, but, you know, as I've said, you drop a candy bar on the street and somebody's going to tell you to pick it up. It's very, very tightly controlled. It used to drive me nuts until I realized, oh, these streets are clean. Does the conflict of opposites belong to the inescapable conditions of life? And does he who recognizes and lives the unity of opposites stand still? Another problem that's emerged. Before he had seen his principles and his desire as two different things. And now he's seeing how they work together. They aren't two separate things. There is a higher principle being born in this snake-like path, namely Jungian psychology, which has done much good to many people. And he's saying, now, is that the end of the story? If you reach a synthesis, won't life get boring? And what he hasn't come to yet, but we will see him getting to, he's going to ask this question for a while, is no, because it's a spiral. For each moment of synthesis, get ready, there will be a new complication. But again, he hasn't yet understood that. That's how I read that. In other words, he doesn't want to be too healthy, lest life get boring. But if you do try to live a healthy life, I assure you life will not get boring. Because for every victory, there'll be a defeat.
So it's a spiral, and he'll go through the difficulties in another way.
He will keep going it through his life. And I'm wondering, now this is just my opinion, we'll have to see whether you agree or not. But I think we can see at this point he does reach a kind of a holding pattern of stability, which has got some problems about it. And that's why he's going to have another crisis in 1944.
Say that again?
I think we can see coming up possibly unresolved issues. And
that, at the end of our process?
Well, in about the next two pages.
Unresolved issues are going to come up. They'll have to be dealt with later,
later
in July.
Yeah, and that's why he had his crisis in 1944. But what he's done here, he's achieved what he needs to achieve for this moment in his life. And that's all we can ask for. You can't ask a 30-year-old to solve the problems of a 60-year-old. So he's solving the problems of a 30-year-old, which is getting his ideas straight about the nature of his psychology so he can work for the next 30 years or 25 years, whatever it is. That's my opinion, but we'll see how you feel about it. But, But these are the issues that come up. As soon as you talk about synthesis, is that the end of the story? You stop growing? That's what he's asking himself. And he doesn't know. No, because there'll be another conflict. So that's what he's asking. And that is restated at the end of the column 2, 318, the last sentence in the big paragraph. Through taking this burden from life, has he also taken the force from it? And then the serpent turned and spoke ill-humoredly, truly you pester me. Opposites were certainly an element of life for me. See, that's the devil speaking. That's the painful assaults we have from inside. That the nature of those assaults is opposites. So if there's synthesis, where does that leave the devil? He's out of the picture. And so the devil says, you probably will have noticed this. Your innovations deprive me of this source of power. I can neither lure you with pathos nor annoy you with banality. I said devil. It's the serpent, but the devilish aspect of the serpent. And then I think they go on for a bit and then go down to where he says, I'm sorry, on the page 319, the first column. Tell the depths that prospects are not looking too good for us because we have cut off an important organ from life. As you know, I'm not the guilty one since you have led me carefully along this way. And Satan says, you might have rejected the apple. So what the serpent represents is that Eros problem that began when Jung accepted the apple. And he's realizing what it's costing him, and I don't know exactly what he means about what he's cut off. I think it might be morality.
Collective morality.
Yeah, collective morality. So he's saying, I've got rid of collective morality. I've gone with the apple, and now a fine mess that I'm in.
Well, I guess the thing they've cut off is the dynamism of the opposites, because they say they've come to a standstill.
Oh, well, maybe that's it then.
And the opposites are alive.
They maybe that makes more sense, I think.
Where is that
coming? He's reading right here on 319.
Say what you said again, Carol.
I said the thing that's been cut off might be the dynamism of the opposites, because they've just talked about coming to a standstill because the opposites were united. And then later they're going to talk about how the opposites are life, the dynamism of life.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's certainly plausible.
Well, I thought it was simply cut off sensuality, cut off the connection to the instinct.
He says, I can neither lure you with pathos nor annoy you with banality. Because they've arrived at that stillness.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's the cutting.
Maybe that's the cutting, yeah.
I guess it boils down to what you said also.
Well, whatever it is, I think the larger question is, what's the relationship between this process and stagnation? And that's what he's wrestling with now. We know that no synthesis is final. He didn't know that. Yet. These historian initials get thinner and thinner. This is the historian initial 160. I don't know if it's anything to say or not. Just leave it. Okay. Now, this is hard, too. Slowly the throne of God ascends into empty space, followed by the Holy Trinity, all of heaven, and finally Satan himself. Can you imagine what, try to visualize that picture. He resists and clings to his beyond. He will not let it go. The upper world is too chilly for him. Which I take to mean that the devil doesn't, even though he ascends, he doesn't give up his devilishness. He will not be changed into the purity of heaven.
Somebody.
Yeah, I mean, what he's struggling with, I think, is what's okay. So we got this integration. What happens to the devil? And he goes back and forth until we finally see he lets the devil be a devil, which means he's going to have to deal with him later, which is what we'll have to do. That thing never gets integrated. Not if you're living a full life. There'll always be one more temptation, and it should be that way. If you think that this winter work leads you beyond temptation. I got 40 acres on the back side of the moon. I'd love to sell you. Now, S is the soul. Have you got tight hold of him? I, welcome, hot thing of darkness. My soul probably pulled you up. Now the S changes to Satan. So the new S is Satan.
Where are you now?
I thought that was Satan
on the floor.
Oh, it was serpent before.
I'm on 319. The historiated initial.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, S is now Satan.
See, the footnote says, that's why I said it. Footnote 30.
Oh, okay. Red to blue, where it becomes Satan. It's no longer his soul, which is the same color he is, but it becomes blue as Satan.
Cool. Let's see that color. Because it doesn't show up on my copy. Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Because we had him printed black and white.
Oh, is that black and white?
Yeah, we just printed them in black and white, not color.
That's what it is. Okay.
Less expensive.
Yeah, of course. That would have been a fortune to have done it in color. Yeah, so, have you got hold of him is the soul, and then Satan, why this noise? I protest against this violent extraction. Don't get lost in the details. The basic idea is, he's seeing an elevation of the divine, I hate to say goodness, but I'll say it, divine goodness, and the battle with Satan. And he's going to try to get rid of Satan, but he can't. So even though there's this wonderful integration, there's another chapter. There's always another chapter. And then a little bit further down, it's a good thing to have you. You're the liveliest thing in the whole dogma. That's Job. And the idea in the book of Job is that Satan spurs on the whole drama by challenging Yahweh. Again, the bigger point is we're dealing with his recognition that even though there's synthesis, something remains. Listen, next to the next line. Listen, something has just happened to us. We have united the opposites. Among other things, we have bonded you with God. I take that to mean that for this moment, the synthesis that Jung has reached is a balance of instinct and spirit, goodness and, again, I hate the word evil, but goodness and hurtfulness, goodness and harmfulness. He knows he's doing harm. He accepts both. He lives both. And that is what will allow him to be creative for the next 30 years.
I think it's important to note that people who don't allow themselves to live the instinct and the harm people nonetheless. They just can't see.
Or more.
Or more.
Absolutely. This is the irony. Again, we get, because we're living almost 100 years later, but for a guy steeped in the Victorian world, this is new thought. And heretical thought. When I read this, I always think of the movie Amadeus, when Mozart's confessing to the priest, and he's just going on about all the lascivious things he does and how much he enjoys them, and on and on and on and on. And then they give a shot at the priest, and the priest just he just can't absorb that. And yet, here's the man who's produced the most beautiful music in the world. That's this ambiguity Jung is wrestling with. And then, but he's also then saying, is this the final chapter? If we've made a balance, will life stop? And so that's what's going on back and forth. This smells of monism. Monism means there's only one principle. So that's his wondering, is this synthesis the end of the story?
There's only one principle as opposed to...
I hate to say dualism, but within that one principle, there's a polarity.
In monism?
No, not in monism. There's no polarity.
Okay.
And so he's saying, I think monism would be like God is all good. And evil is just the absence of good. More of the same, top of... 319, second column. A most remarkable fact and strange fact has occurred. The opposites have been united. Isn't the result going to be motionless? And Satan says, yeah, you fools. And then that argument continues. This is not that important. The main thing is this idea of synthesis. And now he's beginning to say, well, so what remains? Is life going to get boring? And so on. A little further down, your ranting suggests. Now skip. The Holy Trinity is taking things coolly, it seems, not to dislike the innovation. Because that Trinitarian mind doesn't want change. It likes the stasis. And the Satan says, well, you can't trust the Trinity.
Especially that Holy Ghost.
Yeah.
just interesting that really you can't, you, that is true, you can't trust things for stationary.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, pardon my political agenda, but when Mr. Vice Presidential Candidate said, you are violating Judeo-Christian principles, did that instill trust in you? Paul Ryan said that to Obama. You are violating Judeo-Christian principles.
Yeah.
It makes me mistrust him all the more. Let's take a break.